This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty, Iran's President Hassan Rouhani, before heading to New York in the UN General Assembly session, blamed Arab separatists for Saturday's attack on a military parade in the southwest city of Hawz that left at least 25 dead. He said America has been instigating and providing the means so small mercenary countries in the region can commit such crimes. Both Islamic State and a group called Avaaz National Resistance claim responsibility for the attack. Cecile Shea, global security analyst with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, suggests more than one group might have been involved.
One thing that is concerning is the possibility that the Islamic State and one of the several pro-Sunni, anti-Tehran government groups operating in this area may have cooperated on this attack. And we don't know that yet, but it is a possibility.
At the same time, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told Fox News Sunday President Donald Trump will still like to speak with Iranian officials at the UN.
I don't know that there are any plans to date. The president's been pretty clear. If there are constructive conversations to be had with the Iranians, the president is happy to have them. He'd be willing to do so.
Even with President Rouhani this week?
The leader of the country is the Ayatollah Khamenei. That's who's running the show in Iran. I think that would be an important and interesting conversation.
Wednesday, Mr. Trump is to chair a Security Council meeting on non-proliferation and weapons of mass destruction, expected to focus on Iran and North Korea. In Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, at least 14 civilians and four soldiers were killed Saturday in a six-hour attack on the town of Beni by rebels believed to belong to the Allied Democratic Forces, a Ugandan Islamist group. A dozen of the 19 crew members aboard a Swiss merchant vessel were taken captive early Saturday by pirates off the Nigerian coast southwest of Bonny Island. This is VOA News. Secretary of State Pompeo Sunday said U.S. and North Korean officials are working toward a possible second summit between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and President Trump. But Pompeo said international sanctions will remain in place until, in his words, we get a final denuclearization a promise. U.S.-UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said the key to the change is Pyongyang's attitude has been those sanctions.
Make no mistake, the reason they came to the table is because those sanctions are suffocating them, and they want out. And so we're not going to do anything to loosen those sanctions until we make sure that there is no more threat from North Korea.
Pompeo said he's invited his North Korean counterpart Ri Yong-ho to a meeting on the sidelines of the General Assembly session. Pompeo also said the U.S. has vowed it will prevail in the current trade tensions with China.
To the extent one wants to call this a trade war, we are determined to win it. You know, I ran a small business in Kansas before I came to Congress. I saw how companies were treated differently when they attempted to do business, whether they were trying to sell goods into China or to purchase goods to export from China. I watched how American companies were treated unfairly, differently, a different set of rules. If they wanted to invest in my business in Kansas, they could have. Had I wanted to invest in a Chinese supplier there, I couldn't. These are fundamentally unfair. The American people know that, and President Trump's going to fix it.
Pompeo predicted an outcome which forces China to behave, in his words, positively in areas of transparency, the rule of law, fairness, and reciprocity. Israeli forces killed a Palestinian who was among a group of Gazans throwing burning tires and setting off fireworks in a border protest Sunday. It was the latest in a series of often violent demonstrations that have left nearly 200 Palestinians dead. In Nicaragua Sunday, at least one person was killed in the capital, Managua, as demonstrators marched demanding the release of people arrested in recent anti-government protests. This man said paramilitary supporters of President Daniel Ortega attacked the demonstrators and fired their weapons. Hundreds have been killed and arrested since anti-government protests erupted in April. British opposition Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn said Sunday he supports a second Brexit referendum as his party met for a conference and is expected to debate the matter this week. The first Brexit vote was in June 2016. It passed narrowly. Meanwhile, thousands like Janet Higgins marched in Liverpool calling for a people's vote on leaving the EU.
I just think the people who probably voted leave quite often, they are the ones who are going to suffer the most. These are the vulnerable people. The National Health Service will suffer, will lose jobs. Companies are moving over to Europe already. It's the end of Britain as we know it.
The UK government and EU are far apart from agreement on terms of Brexit, which is supposed to occur next March. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, September 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The death toll in Thursday ferry boat accident on Lake Victoria in Tanzania has risen dramatically.
The latest information that I have is that 225 people have lost their lives and 44 people fortunately escaped.
Freeman Mbowe is the leader of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party. In Rwanda, the trial of political prisoner Diane Rwigara and her mother begins today, Monday. A new report calls for an end to corruption as a first step to achieving lasting peace in South Sudan. And Liberia braces for a major protest today to demand accountability for $16 billion Liberian dollars.
We do not trust this government to set up even any investigative panel. We want an international independent forensic investigative panel.
Martin Colley is head of the group of concerned citizens in Liberia, and we'll talk about the upcoming release of a Sudanese jazz album. Those stories plus Samse O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The death toll in Thursday's ferry boat accident on Lake Victoria in Tanzania has risen dramatically. As many as 224 are feared dead, and many more still are unaccounted for. Some of the dead were laid to rest on Sunday. The accident happened as the MV Nyerere was coming in to dock on Ukara Island. Officials say it was built to carry about 100 passengers, but it was carrying 265 at the time of the accident. VOA reached the regional police commander and a member of parliament from Mwanza region where the accident took place, but both refused to speak on the record. Freeman Mbowe, the leader of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party, says the accident is a national tragedy, but the government failed to be accountable either by regulating waterborne transport and in managing the accident.
The latest information that I have is that 225 people have lost their lives and 44 people fortunately escaped.
I understand there is an investigation going on. What do you know about that investigation?
We understand the board of TAMESA, that is Tanzania Electrical and Technical Staff, something like that. The president decided to dissolve the board today. And we understand also some of the crew members of the ship had also been detained. There was a mass funeral for the deceased who could not be identified and picked by their relatives. And we understand that 8 bodies were buried in mass cemetery in the Isle of Ukara. But you know as well that 176 bodies have been identified and taken by relatives for burial in their respective homes. But you see, the ferry disaster, the seagoing vessels in Tanzania have been capsizing one after another for the last 12 years, since 1996. And in the process, we have lost thousands of people who died, unfortunately. What is apparent at this point in time is this particular ferry was overloaded by passengers and cargo. The capacity was to carry only 101 passengers.
That's exactly, because it seems to me overloading seems to be a problem, whether it's in Dar es Salaam or any other country. Overloading, but this is where regulation comes in.
Exactly, because you see, so far 265 persons have been confirmed to be on board. And the capacity for that particular ferry was only 101 passengers and 20 tons of cargo. It's definitely sure that it was carrying more than 300 passengers on board. So we have two issues at stake here. One is the regulation to control the seagoing vessels. They are normally overloaded. All the time when we have an accident is because of all overload. Unfortunately, no top government official will take accountability and resign for that matter. And consequently, we are seeing more and more ferries capsizing every other day. So again, the government should have enough seagoing equipment to service the services of transportation for passengers and cargo in the lake and in the Indian Ocean and all the water bodies within the country. The opposition has been complaining all the time that we need to have responsibility and the government needs to be accountable, because the government should have the rapid rescue operation in the country. It took 4 hours for the government personnel to arrive at the scene of accident. And actually, it's only the small boats owned by fishermen that were doing the rescue operation in the lake.
But let me say that President Magufuli has called this a national disaster, and he's calling for unity at this time. What do you make of that?
That is correct. It's not a partisan issue, really. It's a national disaster. It's an accident that, you know, needs to be mourned by all Tanzanians. We need to remain unity, and we need to cooperate in every way possible. But this wouldn't put away the fact that there was a negligence in managing the whole accident affair.
Freeman Mbowe is leader of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. A massive protest is expected in the Liberian capital, Monrovia, today, Monday, as thousands demand their government account for $16 billion Liberian dollars. The protest is organized by the Concerned Citizens United to Bring Our Money Back, a group comprising 25 civil society organizations, youth and student groups, as well as trade unions. Moses Gaziewu reports from Monrovia.
News of the protest is being broadcast on radio and television stations in the capital, Monrovia, as well as on social media and by foot soldiers in the various communities. Student leader Martin Kwali is head of the group Concerned Citizens United to Bring Our Money Back, which is organizing today's protest.
The people have suffered for 171 years. We cannot continue to breed the ground of systemic corruption. What has happened under the presidency of President Weah is what can better be described, in our opinion, as the most horrific corruption scandal since 1847.
Kwali describes the protest as a peaceful assembly meant to petition the United States, the United Nations, and the European Union to send independent investigators to probe the missing $16 billion.
We do not trust this government to set up even any investigative panel. We want an international independent forensic investigative panel. The Ministry of Information is giving one account. The Ministry of Justice is giving another account. The Ministry of Finance is giving another account. President Weah said there was missing money. The Minister of Finance said there was no missing money. So who do we listen to?
Many Liberians have been in a panic mood since the announcement of the protest, particularly after the Economic Freedom Fighters of Liberia, one of the collaborating organizations, issued a strong water statement last Friday asking parents not to send their children to school today. They also asked businesses to close. The United States Embassy in Monrovia issued an alert warning U.S. government workers to stay away from crowded areas and keep low profile. The Liberian government has allowed the protest to take place even though the organizers did not get a permit from the police. Following a meeting with the protest organizers, the Liberian National Police announced over the weekend that it will provide security and guidance for the protesters. The meeting was witnessed by various international organizations, key among them being the United Nations, the European Union, African Union, and ECOWAS, among others. Police spokesman Moses Carter said the police want to maintain peace in the country.
I was taught to sit with these protesters first day to find out the routes that they will be treading and how can we guide them in this process. They were also made to understand that the essence of working with national security is basically to ensure that people do not infiltrate the process.
But Mr. Carter warned that any protester who want to cause trouble will be dealt with in accordance with the law.
The only thing we urge them and the supporters is to remain in the ambience of the law, because any attempt for any of the protesters to go out of the ambience of the law will take its course. We have the responsibility to jealously protect this peace that we enjoy today, and we'll do nothing to compromise that responsibility.
The $16 billion, described by some as one of Africa's biggest financial scandals, has put the government of President George Weah in a bin. Currently, President Weah is in the United States to attend a 73rd UN General Assembly. But before his departure, he delivered a short national address promising Liberians that his government will leave no stone unturned in its investigation about the money.
I want to inform you that an investigation is ongoing into the circumstances surrounding money brought into the country by the Central Bank of Liberia, and we will not rest until the facts are established and your questions are answered.
Today's protest is intended to pressure the government to expedite the investigation with transparency. Moses Gazil, VOA Daybreak Africa, Monrovia, Liberia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, September 24th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. In Rwanda, the trial of political prisoner Diane Rwigara and her mother begins today, Monday. Rwigara was the only female candidate who challenged President Paul Kagame in last year's presidential election that Mr. Kagame won with almost 99% of the vote. She was arrested after the government accused her of exaggerating the number of signatures needed to qualify her candidacy. Rwigara's day in court follows last week's pardon by President Kagame of another opposition leader, Victoire Ingabire. Tabitha Gwiza, the aunt of Diane Rwigara, says Diane should never have gone to jail because the charges against her were politically motivated.
Diane Chima Rwigara and her mother, Aveline, have been in prison for a year. For no reason whatsoever. I don't know what will happen, but I hope that justice will be served. And my sister and my niece, Diane, will be released because they are not supposed to be there in the first place. People all over the world have been doing advocacy for Diane Rwigara and political prisoners. I would like to take this opportunity to thank them on behalf of the family and ask them to continue fighting for freedom of speech, human rights, and political space for all Rwandans.
You said that Diana is not supposed to, first of all, be in jail, but the government said that during the election last year that she misrepresented some information during the election. That's why they put her in jail.
That's right, but it's not true. Even Diane herself talked about it, that everything they have been accusing her, it is not true.
What do you make of the fact that Victoire Ingabire, another opposition leader, was released? Is this a good gesture on the part of President Kagame?
I can say that they have been talking about this presidential pardon. But to me, I don't call it that. Reason saying that Ingabire and Kizito did not do anything wrong to have a presidential pardon. Therefore, I believe that this so-called pardon is a politically motivated move of the government.
Diane, let's assume that she is released like Ingabire. Will she be in politics again or will she leave politics?
I believe so. It's in her blood. I can't speak for her, but I believe what she started doing, I believe she's going to continue doing.
Should she apologize to the government?
Apologizing for what? You apologize for something you did, for the crime you committed. She did not do anything wrong. Therefore, there is no reason for her to ask the presidential pardon.
It's so nice to talk with you. Thank you very much always for your input.
Thank you so much, James, for having me.
Tabitha Gwiza is the aunt of Rwanda political prisoner Diane Rwigara. She was speaking with me from Toronto, Canada. South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar turned down an invitation Saturday from President Salva Kiir to visit the South Sudanese capital, Juba. Machar, the leader of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition SPLMIO, told Kiir in a meeting in Khartoum that the environment in South Sudan is not conducive for a visit by a rebel delegation. The Washington-based Enough Project says South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement will not change the situation in the country. In a new report, the group says there must be transparency and measures to end corruption before any real change can take place in South Sudan. IMBO reports.
In a new report, the Enough Project says power-sharing agreements in South Sudan are inadequate short-term fixes for underlying systematic challenges to governance. This month's peace deal signing and the events that led up to it point to a South Sudanese history that seems to repeat itself, according to Brian Adeba, Deputy Director of Policy at the Enough Project.
If there's anything that's even constant in South Sudan, it's that history repeats itself. We get into short-term deals that satisfy short-term inclinations. We don't look at the big picture We don't look 10 years down the road. What are the implications? What are the implications of corruption going down the line 5 years from now? Is South Sudan going to recede further in the list of corrupt countries? Is development going to recede further?
According to the New Enough Project report, leaders did not do enough to make sure that corrupt officials were brought to justice. Adeba says corruption is another red flag that is central to the conflict. Specifically, he says, there is a lack of transparency in how the oil revenues are managed. But several steps can be taken to curtail corruption in South Sudan's largest revenue stream.
For instance, we say oil revenues. I mean, one can take steps to make transparency evident in how oil revenues are spent by involving a large sector of people of South Sudan in oversight. So you would want to have civil society so that everyone knows what's happening with the money. You would want to have parliamentary committees deeply involved in oversight on this money. You would want to have members of the clergy, maybe different sectors of South Sudanese society involved in oversight of the money, and ensuring also that accountability really takes place. And those who abuse government money, public money, are held accountable for their actions.
The region has been credited with playing a role in the revitalized agreement, but Adeba says South Sudan's leaders should be aware that its neighbors are personally motivated.
Uganda really wants this deal to secure South Sudan as an economic pot for its own needs. South Sudan, Ugandan goods are going to be, Uganda is going to be the main beneficiary of a deal because, there is no production at all in South Sudan at the moment. Everything, including food, sometimes is imported, and Uganda wants that.
An inclusive and transparent peace process that addresses corruption and includes diverse voices could go a long way in ensuring that past mistakes are not repeated, according to Adeba. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
This November, Habibi Records will issue a re-release of Jazz, 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 an album from Sudanese band The Scorpions and Saif Abubakar. The original record was produced in 1980. Some called it the Holy Grail of Sudanese music. Composer and band leader Saif Abubakar talked to Ricky Stryak about his excitement over the re-release and his thoughts on Sudanese current music scene.
Yes, actually, it's actually one of the greatest excitement for us, actually. Because, the release of this, actually, all the band members are very happy. And actually, I think it's going to be something that we would be proud of, actually, to be released, so other people can hear what we have already produced.
When is the last time you and your band created an album or released an album?
The members of the band, actually, when we released this album, actually, it was before a long time, as a matter of fact, actually, as an album. At that time, actually, it was recorded on a TV, and then it was an album, okay? And there were some cassette, audio cassettes. So they were sold out, and I was really surprised sometime when I went to France. I saw the same album actually was copied by one of the companies, and it was sold in West Africa and many other places. Now it's been quite a long time. Some of the band members, they left, and they are playing in other some of them, they left in other countries. But when we go back home to Sudan, we actually gather together, and then there is another band. Some of our members joined another band, but we play together, all together.
And because I read that the original copies of it can sell for $1,000, so when you say you're re-releasing it, how does that work? It's a digital copy?
Yeah, because actually, now maybe only just a few copies were left, and that's why some people might be very much interested, like as a hobby. They collect, different albums, actually, from old songs, or original songs, actually, from African music and all of this. That's why it came became very expensive. This is what I heard, actually. I heard, actually, from different sources that it was the album once, actually, reached up to $1,000.
You live in Kuwait. When is the last time you were back in Sudan?
Oh, just before about 1.5 months I was there. There, actually, we played together and we made some rehearsals. Time allowed, we wanted also to just record another new releases, coming.
What did you think of the music scene in Omdurman?
Yeah, the music actually is still, because I go there from time to time, the music is still going on, but not as it used to be before. Now, mostly now it is a mixture, combination of traditional and some Sudanese songs, actually.
Traditional and modern?
Yeah, some of them actually, some traditional, but They use, like, actually, in addition to this, they use, you know, modern instruments. To tell you frankly, actually, when we released this album at that time, some of the experts in music, they told me this album, actually, you release it now, it is actually before its time. It came earlier, many years before it is its time. And some of actually our, you know, our people who listened to this album, they said they couldn't believe this album was released long time ago, as a matter of fact.
That was Saif Abubakar, composer and musician. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Kuwait. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the CAF Champions League, where Al Ahly has cruised into the semi-finals of the 2018 CAF Champions League after they claimed a 4-0 win over Horoya AC at the Al Salam Stadium in Cairo on Saturday night. The result in the second leg of the team's quarterfinals tie saw the Red Devils advance 4-0 on aggregate and set up a North African derby against Algeria's ES Setif in the final four next month. The teams will meet in Cairo and Setif on the 2nd and the 23rd of October, respectively, while the other semi-final sees Angola's Primeiro de Agosto face Tunisia giant Esperance de Tunis. Primeiro de Agosto earlier held TP Mazembe to a 1-1 draw to advance to the semi-finals after winning the tie on the away goal rule after a 1-1 draw on aggregate, while DR Congo's Mazembe are eliminated. Esperance de Tunis booked their place in the semi-finals of the 2018 CAF Champions League with a 1-0 win, 3-1 on aggregate over Tunisia rivals Etoile du Sahel at the Stade Olympique de Sousse. ES Setif booked their place in the 2018 CAF Champions League semi-finals at the expense of defending champions Wydad Casablanca following a 0-0 draw at the Stade Mohamed V in Casablanca. In women's football, South Africa claimed a thrilling 2-1 victory over Central African guest nation Cameroon in the final of the 2018 COSAFA Women's Championship as Refuelle Jane proves the hero with both goals at the Wolfson Stadium in Nelson Mandela Bay on Saturday. Jane backed a goal in each half as Bayana Bayana retained a title they won in Zimbabwe last year. It's a fifth win in six tournaments for the team and an excellent warm-up for the African Women's Championship in Ghana in November. In basketball news, it was an historic day for Nigeria basketball team to this year's World Cup after they secured their first ever FIBA Women's Basketball World Cup win. The Tigress defeated Turkey 74 to 68 points on Sunday. The win for Nigeria also completed an impressive African double against European opposition, with Senegal having taken a thrilling triumph against Latvia earlier in the day. And now to athletics news. Stephen Makoka and Hilela Johannes of South Africa cruised to victories at the Sanlam Cape Town Marathon, an IWAF Gold Label Road Race on Sunday. Stephen Makoka wrapped up a fine win in 2 hours, 8 minutes, 31 seconds, setting the South Africa all-comers best and clocking the fastest time in the country since 1986. Makoka finished half a minute ahead of Kenyan Albert Korea, who clocked 2 hours, 9 minutes, 2 seconds. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sport. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a great day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. 12 crew members of a Swiss commercial ship have been taken hostage by pirates who attacked the vessel as it sailed off the coast of Nigeria. That's it for this Monday, September 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very productive week.
Hello, I'm Lenor Moudou, host of Health Chat. On September 26, the United Nations will hold a high-level meeting on tuberculosis with the goal to end the global TB epidemic by 2030. Join us this Tuesday as we discuss the significance of the upcoming UN meeting and look at the global fight against TB. Our guest is Gavin Churchyard, CEO of the Orum Institute in South Africa. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.